Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayler-Thompson.
My name is Adam Lavaz. Thank you for joining us for episode 82. And it must be said right off the top, Rick, that you and I are lucky to be alive. And the reason I say that is we're coming off the previous week, probably the sickest you and I have ever been last week leading up to this podcast. We have been in the wars. And before I cross to you, because I know you had the gastro, I just want to frame something.
Well, it's not, we have to put a quick, it's not coronavirus.
It's not coronavirus, no, it's definitely not coronavirus. But I got so sick that the Monday night last week, within the space of an hour, my daughter, myself, and my wife all got it. It was probably the toughest night we've ever spent in our lives. And you're kind of lying there going, you know, losing the will to live sort of stuff. But it was tough because normally it doesn't happen that way. Normally you've got one of the adults is on deck to sort of look after and stuff, but we weren't. And then my youngest, who's 14 months, Iron Guts, didn't get any of it and was bubbly around in the morning or something. We had nothing to give her.
It hard, doesn't it?
It makes it really hard. And you were the same, mate, weren't you?
Yeah, it went through the whole family. And normally as teachers, we catch these things from our students, but I don't know about you, but it seems, I think both of us seem like we've got it from somewhere else, which I guess if there's any silver lining, Adam, it's the fact that we don't think we caught it from any of our rotten students.
Joking. But does that still leave us open? That's the worry. You feel like once you get it once from the students, you're kind of immune for 24 months.
Yes.
Seeing as we potentially got it from elsewhere, I still have that nervous in the back of my mind that once a kid goes down, I could still be in a bit of strife.
Absolutely. And I'll just subtract the word rotten there. That was me being facetious. Adam, it's been a great couple of weeks since our comeback podcast, hasn't it?
In podcast terms, not in health terms.
That's right. We want to thank everyone who's given us a like or a comment on Facebook or across the other platforms, including Twitter. And it's been great, Adam. We finally got our back catalogue in the most recent episode on Spotify.
Very exciting. I feel like I'm up there with my favourite artists of all time. You know, we've got the Beatles, we've got Metallica, you know, you've got Pantera. Two regular teachers on there in the podcast section. It's fantastic.
Fantastic. And also on Apple Podcasts, I just want to give a shout out. I'm not sure who Tomo43 is, but whoever you are, Tomo43, thanks very much for giving us a review that's gone into the Apple Podcasts. And Tomo43 mentioned that the Two Regular Teachers podcast is great for parents. And I really appreciated that shout out, Adam, because we would hope that it would target that audience as well.
Well, we try and I think what we've always set out to do is to give this podcast in the frame of Two Regular Teachers. We don't try and go too technical. We don't try and go really deep or go into things. We want things that people can listen to and understand that this is these are the issues that regular teachers face every single day. So,
and with us being parents now, and also a lot of our listeners who are teachers being parents, it kind of crosses over everywhere. It does.
So thank you to all our listeners for the feedback. It's really warmed the heart, particularly when I was throwing my guts up last week. All I could think of when my wife said, "Are you okay?" I said, "I'm absolutely fine. We're getting good feedback on the podcast. I can throw up as much as I want." So thanks for sort of getting us through these last couple of weeks. And we're excited to be back again and to have some regularity to the podcast that we haven't been able to have the last couple of years. So we're hoping that this is going to be continuing.
We certainly do, and we've got plans ahead for different episodes for the year, and we've got plans for tonight's episode, Adam, so let's get into it. So Adam, for our first topic tonight, you were looking through your tweets during the week, and you noticed something that's kind of piqued your interest about leadership.
I have, mate, and it comes from Adam DeVico, who's, I think, a former principal from America, and he just put up a tweet around a few things he learned as a principal. Now, I wanted to frame the discussion not from a principal subject, from a principal point of view, because you and I haven't been principals. However, what I wanted to talk about were a couple of things he brought up that I think applies to leadership in general. Now, you've had the opportunity many times over the years as a teacher to be a leader. I've had that opportunity. You know, we've been PLC leaders. I'm a current wellbeing leader at our school and things like that. That I think often as teachers, we get put into leadership roles because we're keen to do it. But there's aspects of it that I think you almost have to learn on the job. Do you understand what I'm saying there? I think that you don't learn them at university. You might learn them looking at other people. But when you're in that actual role, there's things you've actually got to learn on the job as a leader that I think is quite difficult to do. So the first, I want to frame a couple to you and get your thoughts on them. So the first one I think that can be hard as a leader is that you're never going to please everyone. I think that's a tough one that every leader from a PLC leader right through to principal class has to face all the time.
Absolutely, and I think that's the first dot point, isn't it, on the tweet? And I think it's absolutely right. And I've speaking to some of the principals that I've worked under, one recently comes to mind that was one of the things that they said, you have to get used to that, and you have to believe that, because you know, I guess you aren't there to please people, are you? And that's generally life. And we even tell the kids that, though, don't we? As you know, when we're teaching kids, we try and speak to them about real life is where you won't please everyone, and you're not always going to be pleased.
No, because what are we in the school for? We're in the school for the kids, and sometimes decisions come up that I think you know sometimes too, don't you? You know your team and you know the people around you, and that you're going to bring a decision to the table or an idea to the table that some people are going to bite back on. And I think what goes with the never going to please everyone is, and Adam didn't have this as part of it, but I think as well that you need to be able to take the criticism and take the feedback and understand how you're going to bring everyone on board. And I think the failure that some leaders out there have, and not just in teaching and around play, is that they will bring in an idea and this is what it's going to be, and I don't want to listen to the feedback and I don't want to take things on board from the staff. They go, this is how it's going to be, this is how I believe it's going to be, and this is where it's going to be best. Basically, stiff bickies. If you don't like it, that's bad luck.
I think sometimes, I understand what you're saying. I do also think that sometimes in a leadership role, there may be some situations where if there's a new angle or a new program that a leader wants to bring in, particularly with schools, if it's well researched and it's coming from above them, this is something that schools should implement. I think they still need to deliver it in that positive way, but be transparent with staff and explain, this is why we have to do this. Yes, maybe you don't have much of a choice, but then I think there are lots of other things that require that consultative kind of aspect to it where staff opinions are asked. I know good principals often too will try and buffer and shield some things from their teachers so their teachers can just focus on teaching, and to me that's really good leadership.
It's an underrated thing of leadership too, is that buffer, isn't it? Really buffering for staff and only letting things get through that they really need, because it's such a big job that you know you really need to, it's a great skill to have. The second one of the 3 points I wanted to bring up, the second one I think is one that I think we can forget a lot as well, which is parents are sending and this is the way he's written it, parents are sending the best they got. I think that's one thing that can get overlooked.
Absolutely. Parents, we'll say that again, parents are sending the best they've got. It is, when I read that, when you shared with me the tweet, I actually thought to myself, you know what, that's a sentence that I would have liked to have seen at the beginning of my career. Because often we can get, you know, if you use up all the strategies you've got sometimes with a student, you often think, what am I going to do? Or something's not working. I think if you can keep that in mind, that you know, these students have come from whatever situation they're born into and they can't help that. But what we can help is perhaps how often we support them. Because we're the ones, someone in leadership once said to me, we're the ones being paid in this relationship. Parents aren't getting paid for, you know, being the parent and the student, but we are getting paid. Now that, some people see that as quite a harsh thing to say, but I think with students that, particularly who struggle, we're the ones getting paid. We owe it to them to keep trying, I guess.
I think the word that comes to mind there is patience. You know, sometimes where you need to have a parent meeting and things aren't going really well, it's getting them up and sitting there and looking at them and wanting to understand where they're coming from and having some patience. And I think sometimes there's parents who come up and they're already under the pump and they know they need to be there and they're just so short with you and they get a bit cranky and things. And I think we need to have that patience and understanding. You know what? Obviously, at the moment, this family is coming from a vastly different point than, let's say, they were 2 months ago. I need to understand that and be patient with them and work with them to get through that, to help them onto the other side.
If we think of being a good leader too, a good leader though will still, I guess, support and look after their staff in a way so that their staff can continue to help those families that you're talking about and not get jaded or feel like that they're left on their own.
Absolutely.
I think too often teachers in some schools where the leadership might be poor can feel like they're on their own in those situations, so a good leader would always sort of provide that nurturing environment for their staff.
Great point. Last one I want to bring up, and I'm going to compare it to AFL here at the moment, if you don't mind, mate. But the last point that Adam made, he had five, but we're only going to talk about three, was nothing replaces a solid teacher. Now, the way I want to frame that in an AFL sense is that when you think about it in a school, I think every school's got a few outstanding teachers that always, you know, crop their head up, that, you know, really good knowledge bank and just that, they're just that all-round great teacher. But if you think in an AFL side, there's always a couple of those absolute gun players. But some of the most important parts of that team are those solid blue-collar workers, that half-forward flanker who just goes out there every single week and does the job that is asked of them and plays their role superbly. And I think within a school setting, that sort of teacher is so important to the makeup. That teacher who just comes in and works their backside off and has a great program. They're not the most outstanding. They may not be the most bubbly teacher. They may not be the one who aspires to be a principal or to go further. But that you know you can rely on them. They're going to come in every single day and absolutely work their backside off.
Well, then you could argue that that's a different form of leadership, isn't it? So they might not have a title, like you said, and they might not be a teacher that wants to climb the ladder. They might just want to, I shouldn't say just, but they might want to stay in the classroom for their career. They are still a form of leadership, aren't they? Because like you said, they could still work in any role in the school. They might be working in the lower grades and then in the upper. Wherever they are, they always share their expertise, and they might lead a team. But they're so reliable, like you said, that they are kind of acting as a quintessential leader or spiritual leader, you know, for want of a term that gets thrown around a lot. But it's a different form of leadership.
It is. And I think leadership as well needs to acknowledge those teachers and work to understanding where their strengths are so they can continue to work to those. I think the solid ones sometimes are given, you know, can you go and do this for me? It's not necessarily an area of expertise or an area of strength or an area of interest. I think as leadership, as a PLC leader or a team leader or wherever you're leading in the school, you look at that teacher and go, where are their strengths? How can I play to those strengths to continue to get the best out of them so they're motivated, they're engaged? And you're right, it's no different to that class setting. You look at some of those kids who are just those solid students. How do I continue to get the best out of them? It's the same when you're thinking about your staff.
And just maybe a question, Adam, just to leave, if you don't mind me leaving a question out there for our listeners. I'm wondering whether, and I'd love to hear comments from people because we could talk about this further, is how much is there between what is innate in people in terms of leadership skills and what comes from training? For example, I did PLC leader training at the start of this year. Now, I've been a PLC leader before, like you mentioned, haven't done the training. How much of it is the kind of person you are and the skills that you've already got? And how much of it is the training? Does the training just put like the finer points on the person that you are? Is there a certain person that actually cannot be a leader? I don't want us to answer that now, but maybe something for our listeners to think about.
Yeah, great point, mate. And so hit us up on the Facebook page, on Twitter. We'd love to hear your feedback on that because that is a great question. Well, Rick, second topic for tonight is something we wanted to acknowledge around International Women's Day, which was on Sunday, the 8th of March. And we wanted to have a bit of a chat about women in the profession of teaching and in general and the positive impact they've not only had on us as teachers, but on teaching as a whole.
Yeah, Adam. So firstly, like I don't know whether many people say this, but happy International Women's Day for all those women in the world last Sunday. And I guess I'm conscious of the fact in this segment, Adam, not to just talk about female teachers and male teachers.
Yes.
And we have talked about male teachers, and we will again, I'm sure. It is important to talk about, we are all teachers in this profession. But I just thought, you know, being that it was International Women's Day on Sunday, it would be nice to sort of riff on the fact of some of the great ladies in our profession that have influenced you and I, and also influenced everyone in the past, and also perhaps even some of the teachers that you and I remember as kids. And, I mean, the stats don't lie. You and I have worked in a few schools, and predominantly they are filled with female teachers. I've worked under a female principal and as well as a male principal. And I've got to say to start off that, like, and I still talk about some of my early mentors, but I was very lucky at the school I started at. I had a fantastic group of leaders and mentors who happened to be girls who'd been in the job for different amounts of time. And just the support I got was just so consistent, and I'm lucky to still have contact with these people, and they know who they are. One of them worked next door to me and was my actual VIT mentor, and then I had a unit leader at the time. But it amazed me how quickly and easily some of these people at the time, at their age, probably late 20s, you know, in their 30s, just stepped into these leadership roles and were beacons in the school.
Yep.
And, you know, I didn't see them as, oh, that's a female teacher. I just saw them as they are my mentors. But they had such an effect. And one thing stood out. I remember the first student that tested me out in my first week, you know, the student that just kind of knows that you're a first year and just, you know, behaviour-wise.
Push the buttons.
Yeah. And as for me, my strategies were still building. I didn't have that many. I only had a few. And so I'd use them all and they didn't work. And my unit leader at the time just immediately got me on the front foot, helped me with a behaviour plan, organised a parent meeting, sat in on the parent meeting with me, went through the behaviour plan. Not once did I feel overwhelmed or undermined, just well supported. And I was just amazed at how good that particular teacher was.
And how good is that? And I want to come back to something you mentioned about the VIT, the mentor, how important that is in your first year of teaching. I was the same, my VIT mentor. It was funny, I've been teaching 5-6, my mentor came from prep.
And that, for those people who are outside the state, who might not know that, the VIT is from the Victorian Institute of Teaching, and you have to basically do a project in your first year of teaching that kind of shows the evidence of how you teach, don't you?
But working alongside her, she was so positive and so bubbly and so supportive and stuff that every time I watched a lesson or they came in, I never felt like I was under the pump or being watched. They just gave wonderful feedback, and they were such a good soundboard, and she was so supportive, and I don't think I would have got through that year and done as well as I did with my VIT and the things without her input. It just wouldn't have happened. And again, this teacher didn't know me from a bar of soap when I came in. I was a young fella and she had three older kids and you know, couldn't come from different backgrounds, and it didn't matter. We clicked, and the support and the positivity and things that she gave made that first year. I mean, I loved my first year anyway, but it made it even better than what it was. And I knew I had someone there that I could go to, that I could trust with anything that came up.
It's interesting. That's fantastic. I don't know I'd love to see the most recent statistics around principals in Australia about in terms of the ratio between male and female, but because I often see articles in the newspaper, and I'm sure like a lot of people do, about the percentage or the lack of females in leadership roles in other professions, even up as high as the government. But I feel that in our career, in the small snapshot that you and I have, is that it's filled. Our career is filled with female leaders. As it should be. But I haven't got any research to fall back on. I presume that there is still maybe a lack of females in principal roles, but I can't be sure about that. But my feeling is that I'm surrounded by great female leaders in our profession. And I think the teaching profession is one perhaps that could be a model for female professionals climbing the ladder.
Well, we've spoken about it before, but when we first started teaching, you know, there wasn't as many males. I mean, I remember going through uni, there was a big group of males, and by halfway mark, I reckon half of them had already gone, but a lot of those, the female prospective teachers were still there. And I know my first few years at my current school, I was the only male there. There might have been the odd PE teacher that was male and things. But
you certainly don't feel like, I mean, you don't work in that environment and feel outnumbered, do you?
I've never felt like that.
I've always feel like we're all in this together.
Absolutely right. And the school didn't run any worse than any other school. The school ran superbly and did wonderful things and stuff. And because of these wonderful female leaders that we had in the school. And that's just the way it is.
And like we said, we are all teachers. We're not trying to separate both genders. But it's important to note, because we know the statistics in our job. To kind of get to the end of the segment, Adam, I'm wondering whether there was perhaps a teacher from your own childhood that stood out who was a lady. Is there anyone who really stands out?
There was, and it kind of almost comes with an apology, because grade 5 and 6, I wasn't the most conscientious, hardworking, well-behaved student I probably could have been. But my grade 5 teacher, Miss Hay, who I've had a bit to do with over the years, because she's a principal at a school in Geelong, and things that I've, you know, had a little bit to do with over the years. I still call her Miss Hay. And I remember a few times she's looked at me and, you know, asked me to call her by her first name, and I go, no worries, Miss Hay, because I can't do it. But she, what I want to throw out there was, is Miss Hay got me and got the way I learned and understood who I was. So I think she always gave me a little bit of rope, but knew when to pull me back in and was able to do what we were kind of talking about in the first segment. She knew how to play to what my strengths were, and I loved reading and I loved writing, and she really continued to bring that out of me, and that love and that passion for it, to the point where my mum, who I'm going to talk about in a moment, Miss Hay was her favourite primary school teacher, because she could see the value that she brought to the classroom and what she got out of me and the improvement and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I do apologise, because I know I probably would have been a bit of a pain to teach, and I think she still brings that up. She's still with that wry smile when I bring it up, but she was able to consistently get the best out of me and find that in me, even though I was probably a pain. She never gave up on me. She never, you know, turned away. She just, was just fantastic. That was my grade 5 teacher.
And for me, it was my grade 5 teacher too, Mrs. McKinnon. And I just remember, and I wouldn't have said this at the time, but I, looking back now as an adult, I know that I felt safe in her room. And I remember there was great structure in the day. You knew what was happening. There was a really good culture in the classroom. Now, obviously, I wouldn't have said that, but when I think back of the memories, that's what I think made me feel really good.
Yeah.
Definitely had a love of reading as well. So, Mrs. McKinnon, fantastic. And I assume she's retired these days. I'm 40, so Mrs. McKinnon will probably be getting on now. And also, I remember Miss Bufton, who was my Year 11 literature teacher. A lot of people would have been scared thinking they had Miss Bufton as a teacher. I won't go through all the reasons why, but she had a twinkle in her eye, and really, I loved her love of literature. It really lifted even my love of literature.
Great.
So, again, like a shout out to all the female teachers on International Women's Day.
And to finish, I want to give one final shout out to my mum, who was a VCE teacher for 30 years, English and psychology. And I grew up watching mum do reports and a planner, and a more organised, committed, passionate teacher you couldn't find. And she, you know, became head of psychology for a period there as well. And she, I mean, she can look back and go, both of her sons became teachers. We watched mum as a teacher and what she did, and you know how much time and effort and love she had for the profession. You would always know that her students were getting the very best. They were being taught wonderful things, and mum was very, very knowledgeable, even though I have to throw in there that she could be slightly embarrassing at times, and that mum taught at an all-girls school. And when I became a teenager, you know, mum teaching at a Catholic school, walking through town, if there were anyone from that school, you know, who were wearing the school uniform, you know, maybe the socks were down or the blazer wasn't on properly, mum would be the first one over there to go and tell them. Now, here's 14-year-old Adam standing to the side as these girls are looking at my mum and then sort of glancing over at me standing there as if to say, are you going to help us? And I'm quite embarrassed and that sort of stuff. So I didn't necessarily appreciate that aspect.
Cramped your style.
It totally cramped my style to the point where actually my wife is a former student of my mum. So there you go. But but I want to give a shout out to my mum as well.
But she always wears her uniform well.
Always wore the uniform. No, she wouldn't have. She would have been a pest, my wife. But I want to give a shout out to my mum, and a final shout out to all the wonderful women who make schools great and who have supported so many people within the school, and you know, taught so many students so many things. It's just, you know, schools wouldn't function without them.
Well, Adam, we'd like to respond to a comment that we had last week on the blog and also on Twitter from Aaron Davis. Thanks again, Aaron, for your comments. And we thought this could be almost a regular segment. If anyone takes the time to comment, that we could respond. So it's a little bit like Two Regular Teachers Mailbag, really, isn't
it? I like that.
In
Australia
the old
Post
school way.
Yeah.
So Aaron mentioned, this is the follow-on from our conversation last week around the specialists, specialist teachers, specialist programs. Aaron asked a question around whether how... with me in my specialist role, what I've seen in terms of parent-teacher relationships. And Aaron, I know in the past, the schools I've worked at, it's particularly if you think about student conferences and parent interviews, it's few and far between for the specialist teachers. They don't often get a lot of visitors. But just one little example from this year, we decided to have a meet and greet night in February, which was informal, rather than have bookings. And the students were encouraged to visit the specialist classrooms. The specialist teachers would be there, and parents were too. And I was inundated with visitors in the meet and greet night, Adam, and it was wonderful. And so I met a lot of parents, and they wanted to know about the STEM program. And to me, it kind of thought, well, okay, so if you dangle the carrot a bit more and make it a bit more explicit, maybe celebrate what's happening in specialist programs, that you'll get the visitors. So I actually, I've learned since that a bit of some of the professions that some of our parents have, and hoping to get some of them in eventually to maybe talk to the students. So that was a positive.
What a fabulous idea, opening that up, because the kids can kind of go and have their parent-teacher interview, and then on the way I go, oh, for 5 minutes, mum, I want to show you what we've been doing up in STEM. You're here, they can pop in and introduce yourself, and while they're looking at it, you can kind of talk them through it and things. What a fabulous idea. And I want to piggyback on that to say, I know for our school, information night last year, has got washed out this year, but last year we actually encouraged our Japanese teacher, art teacher and PE teacher to come to the information night and actually do a very short presentation to the parents that were there to say, this is what we're doing in PE this year, we're looking at this and this, and sort of to go over and sort of introduce himself and put a name to the face, because obviously there would be some parents that might not know who these people are, what they look like.
Well, so it promotes the program as well.
Yes,
I think
does.
That's really important. And speaking of the programs, another part of Aaron's comment was around, and particularly primary schools, we can't speak too much for high schools, but how primary schools make the decision around what specialist classes they have. And he said, you know, rolling out the usual PE, art, music, what have you. So I think decision making goes around to sometimes the certain expertise that you've got, how you can manage the timetable during the week. I think Aaron's example of some schools that have, let's say they have music, PE, and art, and then they filter STEM skills all the way through those. I know that's something our school is hoping to get better at, and without STEM just being a standalone, because STEM is more of a learning process, as we know.
And can be tough to teach. You know, there's, you know, you think back to, I'm not, certainly not saying PE is easy to teach or anything else, but there's some of those niche sort of subjects that it's hard to find people with that expertise to actually teach it and do and teach it well.
Absolutely. So if you've got any stories around how your school chooses its specialist subjects and how it's all coordinated, we'd love to hear. And thanks again, Aaron, for your comment. And anybody else, hit us up on, like Adam said, the Facebook or Twitter. Send us an email, toregularteachers@gmail.com, or head to the blog.
Well, RKT, it's my favourite time of the podcast, where we have a little dip into the anecdote, and it's your first one in a long time.
Oh, it's a long time, say. Adam. I'm feeling the pressure. And I just wanted to say, a few listeners have asked about the anecdote, or about the topics in general. Do we tell each other, do we discuss and plan together? We do plan our episodes together, but we always keep the anecdote unseen. So Adam doesn't know what I'm going to come up with tonight, because we like to get the natural reaction.
And I always get a bit nervous. I don't know what RKT is going to come up with.
No, Adam, I think you and probably some of our listeners will say you've spoken about this before, and I think we have, but I wanted to touch on, I mentioned it in the previous topic, the early parent conference, or even the one in mid-year. Sometimes people call them student conferences, three-way conferences, the old parent-teacher interviews. I wanted to riff on just a couple of stories, because we had, like I mentioned, the meet and greet recently, and it just got me thinking about my first few experiences over the first couple of years of my career, and hopefully any graduate teachers will get something out of this. Are there any horror stories or, you know, strange stories that have happened during your parent interviews? I was trying to think back to my first year, and I think I may have mentioned this before, but my first year when I did the June interviews, you know, it's winter, obviously in Victoria, it's freezing, and I was in a portable. I ran so far behind, I think by the second appointment I was behind, that I was nearly an hour over time, and there was no kind of annex or anywhere for parents to wait for their interview, so they were out in the freezing cold. I remember one parent ended up playing chasey with his daughter. He was last around the school. When they got in, he goes, "Whoa, it's bloody freezing out there. Oh, we just played chasey just to keep warm. Jeez." And I felt terrible. I didn't know what to say. I remember at that same interview, there was another set of parents. One of them was a policeman, and he spent the whole time, I hadn't met him before, like spent the whole time looking pretty serious. And I knew he was a policeman, and I just got all anxious, like thinking that like he was going to arrest me if I said the wrong thing. I didn't know what to, like,
maybe he was.
Well, I don't know, just absolute panic stations. I don't know about you, but like sometimes, you know how in the teaching profession, you don't want parents to be surprised by anything like on the report. Did you ever get nervous when the parent walks in with the report in their hand?
Yeah, sometimes you do, because
even though you know it's covered, you've covered everything, I still get nervous sometimes.
You do, because, and particularly when, because the way we do it, the kids will do a presentation, they leave, and I'll say, so I always frame it as going, look, I could say a few things, but do you guys have anything on your mind? And they do the reach, what I call the reach. So they lean down to the bag and reach to pull out the report. You're thinking, right, what have I written on there that, you know, you're not happy with or something? But sometimes they just get it and go, they actually wipe it up and go, no, I'm really happy with this. Are we really happy with the report? We thought we'd just bring it along. And it's like,
big sigh of relief.
Really good, because you really do spend a lot of time making sure you're backing everything up, and you don't want to surprise any parents. And that's the thing. Sometimes parents will bring things up, and sometimes they make a mountain out of a molehill. Let's say that, you know, for effort, you've put it as very good instead of excellent. And sometimes that might just be, I frame it as, I've got kids in the class who give 100% at all times. Your child just every now and again, just sort of, you know, he's a boy, he doesn't do it and stuff. It's just very good. And it's nothing that I need to call you guys about, but they go, it's been very good. And you kind of go, well, because that's where their effort level is. If it was average, I would have called you long before now. You know? It's got nothing to get worried about.
Absolutely.
Can I talk? This is a great one. And this is for parent-teacher interviews. I've told this story to some friends before about, not a parent-teacher interview of mine, but when I went along when I was a kid to high school, and it was year nine. There'd been a couple of dodgy comic pictures that had been doing the rounds at school, like these comic ones, and they were a bit rude and whatever, anyway. And I was in computers at the time, and two of my mates were like, oh, we haven't seen him yet. So I said, oh, well, here they are. They're in this folder here, and on a shared folder. So this is 100% true. I got them up and I opened it, and we were having a bit of a giggle, and the teacher started coming around. Tried to get rid of it, screen froze. Right? So I'm giving you the background here. So, of course, there it is. And they're going, oh, I've been trying to catch who's in. And I'm trying to go, it wasn't me. That's it. But anyway.
But you're involved now, Adam.
So I'm involved now. So I got banned from the computers for a month. Managed to keep it secret from my parents, who I knew wouldn't have been very happy that I got into trouble for this and all that sort of stuff. So I'd kept them secret, except it came around to parent-teacher interviews, and you know, my ICT teacher had asked to see my parents, and my dad came along. My mum didn't come. My dad came. So we'd gone through, and I'm packing myself because I've lied to them. I haven't told them this is going on. Anyway, we sat down for it. I'm shaking. The teacher actually looked at me and said, "Listen, Adam, I just actually want to catch up with your dad one-on-one." And ooh. I went, no worries. And off I went, and I reckon I went to the toilets, had probably the most nervous wee of my life. I was in there going, "I'm dead. My dad is going to absolutely kill me." Now, I'd been on my best behavior for the month after that I'd been banned. You couldn't have found a better behaved student.
I bet.
Came back out, waited sort of off to the side. Dad sort of finished. There was nothing in his face. He came over to me, walked over to me and said, "So where are we headed next, Dads?" And I went, I think we've got English next. Righto, off we go. Never mentioned it. Wow. I have no idea. My dad's not alive anymore. I have no idea if the ICT teacher said, "Look, do you know about it?" and sort of talked about it. My parents said, "Cotton on." I don't know if they called the head.
So
I don't know.
You don't
what
know what
happened.
They talked about. They no idea. They may have just talked about Melbourne's fortunes in the footy.
They may have, which were better back then than they are now. But I just thought I'd bring that because that was a horror story for me because I was absolutely sitting there packing myself, thinking about it, and it was never brought up. My mum never brought it up. Great. I don't know what happened there, but because my parents are pretty straight down the line, I thought I'm going to be grounded. I'm in big trouble. Never got mentioned.
It might be something to ask your mum and see whether she remembers, maybe. I think our listeners would like to hear that. Just to finish off, Adam, this is one just to leave, and I won't go into the details of this, but because this still haunts me. I had a father once who was sitting with his wife, with the mother and daughter, who tried to do the nudge with me. He was complaining about his wife and that time of the month.
Oh, no.
And then kind of, you know, leaned into like the daughter being annoying as well, and was trying to do that. You know what I'm talking about. You know, it's hard. It's tough times then, isn't it? And I just sat there and I went, no, it's not. Like, I just
you
said
would have
no
been
a few
mortified
times.
Too.
No, yeah, and obviously I wanted to show that I was, you know, not agreeing with that at all. But that was one of the hardest
that's
that I still remember. Yeah.
Because you're going to win or lose here. If you go with them and go, yeah. I know what you mean. The two girls are going to be like, "What are you talking about?" And the dad's going to be nodding away.
And when I say that time of the month, that was his quote.
Yeah,
not mine.
But if you disagree with him, the two girls are like, "Yep, good on ya." And he's like, "Oh, you've left me hanging here, mate." He's left you in no man's land there. You can't win with either of them.
I think the question that most people will be asking is, how did it even get onto that topic? I've got no idea. So anyway, if you've got, we'd love to hear horror parent interview stories, or even the good ones as well.
Well, mate, that brings an end to episode 82. A little bit of a longer one than maybe what we've done in the past, but I think because we've been absent for so long, we've got a lot on our chest that we've got to get off.
And good topics as well, I think, Adam, tonight. And speaking of good topics, if you've got any topic or any anecdote or anything that you think would be worth talking about, please hit us up. I said before, send us an email, tworegularteachers@gmail.com. Leave a comment on Facebook. You can even private message on Messenger through Facebook, Twitter, direct message, what have you. And please give us a follow on Spotify and maybe a like wherever you can give us a like. And we would love to talk about whatever you think is worth talking about from a regular teacher's perspective.
Rick, I cannot add any more to that. That is perfect. And we just love hearing from our listeners out there. And we're really glad that people are still listening so much. So for me, Adam Lavaz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson. And we've both been Two Regular Teachers.